a doctor in the house.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
Doctor.
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 And doctor.
It's time for Advanced Medicine Monday with Dr. Rashid Batar.
I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer.
A doctor, not a mechanic.
I'm a doctor, not a coal miner.
The doctor is in.
Dr. Rashid Batar, I think he's home. Hey, welcome.
I'm home.
This is crazy, but you're looking good, man. What a we got your giant head in the shot, man. Are you okay with that?
I guess so. I've been called a lot worse than having a giant head, so I guess I'll take it.
No, it's a normal size head. It's just filling the screen. That's okay. I got a pea head. I acknowledge that.
Excited there for a minute. I thought I was going to be like, you know, have a new label that I've got a giant head, but I guess if it's a normal head, fine. I'll just take that too.
Right. Well, you know, the thing is, in connecting again, y'all, this is our first show going out through Natural News Radio. Mike Adams is back in the mix. We're going live out on YouTube. Dr. Batar is streaming it out through Facebook Live and a lot of places. And we have, ultimately, this is going to end up on Brighteon as well, so we don't get censored just in case. But there's a lot of testing behind the scenes in terms of guests. And Dr. Batar, you know, when we practiced this before, we had a shot and shot, a picture in picture. And right now, for whatever reason, you appeared and I lost the picture in picture. So it's just you I'm looking at right now. I shall change this back to me. And I want you to be able to be in a picture with me, but I don't know if I can do that on the fly. That's a Michael Bolden level introduction.
You're pretty good, Robert. So I'm just kind of setting things up myself. I'm actually, believe it or not, I am able to go on Instagram as well. So I'm live Instagram too. So we'll see how things are going on. This is the first time that we're doing it this time of the day. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, we've been flooded on YouTube. They're joining us and liking the daytime format here, which I'm loving too. Midday, I'll get it done and I can go watch my daughter's soccer game, which is going to be fun. And then get back and have dinner with the family. So, you know, it was a decision ultimately for, well, there are a number of reasons we decided to do this. One is family, and that's a big part of this, but also our outreach. I think we tapped the midweek show through GCN for all it was worth, and I think we plateaued. And, you know, the biggest audiences we had in our history together was because of our good buddy Mike Adams, the health ranger, blasting us out to the world. And he's been attacked, obviously, viciously by those that want to censor this message. And yet I think we're outpacing the censors because the more they try to censor us, the more people want to hear from us.
Well, that's always a good thing. And if it helps us to expand our reach, then it's all good, right?
Yeah, I agree. Ultimately, it's going to be a good thing. So let's see what we got on tap for this hour. Let me give you an overview as you're looking at Dr. Batar there. For the FDA, there's an FDA story about a medical advisor claiming that Congress is owned by pharma. That seems to be a bit of a stretch. We'll get to that. But I think I want to open first, Dr. Batar, with you about this mumps-like thing called peritonitis striking the crew on a Navy ship. And I'm thinking, is this another case of they're renaming polio as post-paralytic syndrome? You know, they're just saying, hey, no, this can't be mumps, because guess what? On that Navy ship, compliance with vaccination rate, would you say, is probably 100%?
Yeah, I think that based upon what we're seeing right now, I think I told you about the recent article that came out on I'm going to be posting about it. This was actually in New Zealand where they talked about with measles. There were four cases of measles that were making a big deal about, just like they did with Washington State. And then a researcher, I believe he was a physician, but he also does research, did some titers. And what he found, interestingly enough, was that all four of those people had been immunized for measles. And I think this very much, you know, very possibly this is going to be the same type of thing. In fact, I think that anytime we start talking about outbreak of diseases, we need to start looking back and seeing, is that individual that has supposedly had this outbreak of whatever infectious disease process, what's their vaccination history? Because I think more times than not, we're going to find that the very disease that they are so concerned about that the person has now had is secondary to having had an inoculation for that particular disease. So people don't understand that, Robert. A lot of people don't understand how vaccinations work. So you give somebody an attenuated virus or a synthetic version of the virus or components of that virus. You introduce it into their system so that the immune system now recognizes that foreign substance as an antigen or a haptin and creates an antigen antibody response so that mm-hmm. the next time the body comes in contact with the same material or a similar type of material, usually it's identical material, then the body will then react faster and have a built-up immune response to it. But what people don't understand is that many times that in the field of immunology, when you give somebody an inoculation, there's always a risk, there's always a chance that they can actually pick up the very thing that they're being vaccinated against.
Yes. Well, and here I'm going to quickly show you the article now that we can. We have the ability to do so. And this is the vaccine reaction. It's the article, Mumps-like Peritonitis Strikes Crew of U.S. Navy Ship. So it's a very happening scenario. They basically quarantine the ship. They can't come back. It's called the USS Fort McHenry. Interestingly enough, labeled LSD-43. I don't know if they're experimenting with that, but they're quarantined.
That's not a joke. That's serious.
Yeah, quarantined at sea for more than 2 months due to an outbreak of mumps-like disease. Now, when they say mumps-like disease, Dr. Batar, I do have the question because we've seen evidence, for instance, smallpox. They rename it as monkeypox because it's supposedly eradicated. These are things that, I find very problematic because it's not honest. There's not integrity in the scientific realm. You know, we speak out about these issues. How do you just, is peritonitis really peritonitis or is it the same thing just renamed because they're all vaccinated and that would admit vaccine failure?
It's very, very possible. I haven't even heard of the term before.
I think they made it up then.
Yeah, from the way the words work, you know. Let's see, I'm not sure how you spell parrot, but I would think it was the information of your parrot, you know, your parrot. So I don't know.
Well, they are parroting information in the mainstream news on this issue. Yeah. And, you know, think about it. Consider this. It's not that they could then say, wait a second, it's because of the anti-vaxxers on the Navy ship. It's the vaccine hesitancy movement that the World Health Organization is so dangerous. There is not a community allowed like that on a Navy ship. They are complying or they're out of the military. They're court-martialed. So
that's right.
They would have to either acknowledge it's mumps or then, hey, you know what? We can call it peritonitis. It's sort of like mumps, but it's not the same thing.
Yeah, I think that's very, very possible, Robert. Obviously, I don't have any firsthand knowledge of this, so I can't really make any type of definitive statement. But certainly, based upon how we have seen the system work, renaming diseases, changing terminology, having your own unique terminology in medicine and research, we have our own unique terminology that's used to describe certain things. You know, doctor-induced diseases are called iatrogenic.
Right.
So people don't know some of these things. It's very possible that that's exactly what they're doing. But it wouldn't surprise me, let's put it that way.
Well, and think even, let's just give them the benefit of the doubt just for a moment, right? Let's say that it isn't mumps per se exactly. How great is this for an advertisement for a vaccine? I thought I was not supposed to get anything maybe like it. But then again, when the flu shot is not accurate, they say, well, it really doesn't matter because it still reduces the severity of whatever flu you get, even though the antigen doesn't match the circulating strain. Again, I come back to this and I say their penchant and willingness to just to make stuff up. It is not scientific to just make stuff up.
Well, here's what it really comes down to. If you really want to come down to this vaccine issue, and it's gotten so prevalent now and everybody's talking about it so excessively, it really comes down, has nothing to do with science or lack of science, Robert. It all comes down to the fundamental belief whether you have the right to choose, whether you have a right to choose driving a red car or a black car or a white car or a green car, whether you have the fundamental right to choose what type of food that you eat. Are you going to be vegetarian? Are you going to eat an all meat? People say, well, that's not accurate. You know, that you're extending it, making it too simple of an argument. No, it comes down to the right of choice. Your ability to be able to choose whether or not you're going to put something into your body that supposedly, presumably, is going to protect you from some type of disease versus also knowing full well, and even the people that are pro-vaccine, they can't deny this fact, the constituents within those vaccines are known to cause severe diseases, known to cause the poisons. Okay, so Eli Lilly's own material safety data sheet on thimerosal talks about the side effects of thimerosal, and it states clearly in the material safety data sheet, which was released in 1991, which interestingly enough is the same year that they launched the National Vaccine Initiative to stomp out all childhood diseases. We have a video on that on YouTube. But basically, that year, 1991, the incidence of autism was 1 in 10,000. And from that point onwards, they introduced vaccines on the first day of life with a substance in there called thimerosal, which is a preservative, which is ethyl mercury. Made, it's a basically inorganic mercury, but it's now got an ethyl group added to it. So it becomes 1,000 times more toxic than regular inorganic mercury, which according to the EPA is the second most toxic substance known to man. And this substance, this thimerosal, this constituent of vaccines, to this day that's still included in vaccines, is known to cause severe neurological deficits, including but not limited to mental retardation. This is not something that's just made up. This is the material safety data sheet. If you want to see a copy of it, go to the YouTube channels and look on the look on the video. It's one of the videos on autism. It's called Autism Truth Series. There's 11 videos, and I think it's the second or third video. And it talks. It's called Thimerosal Facts. So look that up and see it for yourself. You will see the material safety data sheet. And when you got a material safety data sheet that's put out, Robert, tell me this, that says that this substance is known to cause severe neurological deficits, including but not limited to mental retardation, why would you want to put that into your child?
It's all too important of a question. And again, the mere asking of it puts us in a category of anti-vaxxer, vaccine hesitancy, and we're declared dangerous because, you know, the process of dehumanization, the process of alienation purposefully to basically gang up on a minority of people, you know, and the interesting thing about a Republican form of government that the United States was founded on, it was to protect the ultimate minority, the minority of one. Even if 319,999,000 and whatever believed in vaccination, one didn't. A Republican form of government defends the rights of that individual to say, you know what, I don't want to vaccinate. And then you would respect that. And we've lost that with a movement toward collectivism. I've called it medical collectivism. We just covered a story, interestingly enough, last hour. I should change the shot here. I was told not to change it too often, but about cardiology and the field, how only 8.5% of the doctors doing it are actually following the gold standard in medicine when they're prescribing a drug, you know, on label, peer reviewed, multi-dose, multi-trial, I think you call it, centered trials that are inert placebo, right? We would expect. And then only 8.5% of the doctors are doing that. You know, and then the science is settled. They say, oh, aspirin is good for you, everyday aspirin. And then they go, well, maybe it's not good for you or everybody, maybe anybody. And so more evidence the science is actually never settled. And so, you know, bringing these things up is necessary for the movement of science to always do better, not status quo or worse, which is what upset you so tremendously as a physician, why you do advanced medicine. You don't want mediocre medicine or less.
Well, Robert, here's the thing that you made a comment that I feel like I need to correct you on.
Sure.
You basically easily exchanged two words. You said medical and then you said scientific. Mm. Now, what you probably have failed to recognize, which I show a slide on this, there is a distinct difference between medical literature and scientific literature.
Ooh.
All right.
Good one.
And medical literature filters and amends much of that information. So just because it's been published in the scientific world, the medical community doesn't always accept it, or they're very, very late at accepting it. So this is a first component. If you look under ATSDR, the Agency for Toxic Substance and Disease Registry, which is a subdivision of the Centers for Disease Control. So ATSDR is part of, ATSDR is basically listing all the different studies that have been done looking at all sorts of substances that could potentially have any type of deleterious effect. When you do a search, this is information that goes back to 2002, 2003. When I testified in front of Congress, that was in 2004, and I presented a slide that I had done years before, 2 or 3 years before, when I was a chairman of the education committee for the American Board of Clinical Mental Toxicology. And in that slide, Robert, I showed where doing a search under brain injury or neurological deficits and mercury revealed over 1,400 peer-reviewed studies that had shown a correlation between the use of mercury, clinical use of mercury, thimerosal and such, and neurodegenerative disease. Then doing the same search under mercury and heart disease, like 600 articles. Mercury and cancer, 350-some articles. This is back in 2002, 2001 time frame. Now, why is it that if there's so many studies showing mercury correlated with cancer, heart disease, and neurodegenerative disease, why is it still being used in the medical setting? The question is, when you look at the medical literature, you rarely see anything to do with mercury. Why? Because they don't accept it. It's, in other words, there's two different.
That's a powerful distinction, Dr. Bittar. I don't think many people have heard of that distinction.
No, they haven't. And they, and this is one of the things that's really, really interesting, because when you start looking at science and you start looking at medicine, they're two different things, Robert. Notice when we practice medicine, because God knows we need to practice it. And we call our patients because they need to have patience with us while we're practicing this art called medicine. I mean, literally, it comes down to it. These are not words I'm making up. You know, this is the standard language, right? We practice medicine and we call our patients patients. Why? Because they need to have patience with us. This is not scientific. And anybody who says that medicine is scientific, they've completely lost the boat. Look at 100 years ago, Semmelweis, 150, 200 years ago. Look at Semmelweis, right? He was ostracized and demonized because he washed his hands, because he observed something. The purest form of science is observation. We don't observe anymore. We just do these double-blind placebo-controlled crossover multi-center trials and call it science. But all that does is accumulate facts, okay? Mm-hmm. Facts are like bricks. You build a house off a bunch of bricks. Similarly, you build science based on a bunch of facts. But a pile of facts makes no more science than a pile of bricks makes a house. And this is the thing. You have to first accumulate the facts, and then you build it up, and you see, you structure it, and you see and observe. Are these facts reproducible, and then does it form the house of science? Very, very few times do they actually go through the step. They just collect a bunch of facts, they throw it out there, and they call it science.
Could we say,
a bunch of facts and throwing it out there and saying that's a house.
Right. Dr. Bittar, could I posit that the art of medicine would be the mortar, the design, and the putting the bricks into something that means something or is useful in some way that can help somebody, that you then begin to link the facts with, maybe intuition. It starts it. It's like, let me pause it. I see this fact. What does this mean? What could possibly, how did this fact come about? And then you start artistically. And again, some people are offended by, oh, it's science. There's no art. But again, I've said the greatest danger that had happened when medicine divorced itself from spirit. That was the moment where modern medicine became more dangerous than helpful in most cases. This is not to say surgeons are not amazing what they can do with the physical body going in when necessary, but there's the art of science, if you will, to put those facts in places and ways and interact with them to understand how does the body work. It's not that it works. Let's see what leads to what leads to what. And of course, that's how they discovered some drugs, let's be honest. But at the same point in time, maybe they didn't ask the question of, well, if we stop this from happening because this drug molecule or molecules do this, do we even pay attention to what's downstream from that? And could that be even worse?
Yeah, I wish it was just that simple, Robert, but we've divorced ourselves from observation. And observation is a fundamental part of science, of medicine. In fact, was it Socrates or was it Plato said that the purest form of science is observation? I can't remember which one it was, but one of the Greek philosophers said the purest form of science is observation. So if what you're talking about, if it was just that we've divorced ourselves from spirit, that's bad enough. But we've divorced ourselves from the simple act of observing and then coming up and forming a hypothesis and then testing that hypothesis to then eventually form a conclusion. We don't even do that. We just put a bunch of facts thrown together and call that science. Yeah. So how can you say, it's just preposterous. It's absurd. And I have told people, I've gotten all these accolades, Robert. Now we've got patients from over 90 countries now. We've been really blessed, have made impact in many lives over the last 2+ decades, now 23 years. And I have gotten so many accolades and so many, people will say so many times to me, if a person hears somebody say, you've saved my life once in a lifetime, I think that's an incredible blessing. And I have been truly blessed because I've heard that well over 1,000 times in my life. But what's interesting to me is that my response, I always feel a little guilty. And the reason I feel guilty is because all I'm doing is my job. It's not that I'm so good. It's that I'm in a field of, my career is in such a, it is in a field of such severe incompetence that anybody that's doing the job looks like a shining star. That's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, you're accurate. I know. And it's a beautiful thing to acknowledge that. Unfortunately, you know, it upsets those who are driven solely by their ego. And I know we've joked about this, you know, that you have a big ego, but when it comes to your patients, of course, it's set aside because it's all about them. But many people don't differentiate that in terms of going out into the medical world and helping people. And it's suddenly it's themselves. They're forward in everything that they do, which again is a concern for me, for anybody seeking out the help of a doctor. If somebody came to you, let me switch over to this shot. If somebody came to you, Dr. Bitar, and the first thing they ask you, Dr. Bitar, you know, I heard on this crazy guy's homeopath show that I should ask you, how many bowel movements do you have a day? You know, and you're like, you'd be like, well, that's great. Now I know I got somebody I can work with, as opposed to many doctors would say, how dare you ask me that question? It's none of your business. Or, you know, they're embarrassed to tell you how rarely they go. So the idea, of course, when it comes to patient interaction, it doesn't mean we all have things we bring with us, but what do we put first? And again, when you're devoid of, as I said, the disconnect from spirit, which is one significant aspect to where modern medicine went wrong. But as you added beautifully, the very act of observation is not only not happening, it's discouraged violently. Right?
Exactly.
Doctors who would dare observe children who are healthy coming in for well baby visits, getting vaccinated, no longer healthy, to say the least. They point out that observation in the chart. They might report it. It's like suddenly they're scrutinized. The boards of medicine are going after them, going, hey, what are you doing here? You're actually, you know, I'm observing. I'm reporting what I observed. That can't be. You can't do that.
And then they resort to ostracizing, persecuting those doctors that do observe and do report it. And then demonizing them and going after them. And, you know, what happened with the Geyers, with our friends Mark and David Geyer recently, where the medical board in Maryland, who basically tried to character assassinate them, they filed a lawsuit and won that lawsuit against the Maryland medical board, showing, and that's a hard thing to do because they're, all these medical boards are protected by law, you know, by legislative passage of law, to make sure that they can basically do whatever they want without having any oversight. And so they were able to successfully sue the medical board. And they won a $2.5 million lawsuit. But what was, and remember what their crime was, right? What they were accused of. It was that basically they observed the research. They reported what the research had actually shown. And then they were told that they were basically assassinated. Their careers were assassinated by the medical board, saying that they were not basing their conclusions on science, and basically accused them of being, you know, misinformation and all the normal things that the medicals do to try to demonize the doctor. And they were able to, in a real court of law, not an administrative kangaroo court, in a real court of law, in front of a real judge, show the evidence, and the judge and the jury, I guess, ended up finding that they deserved the award, the punitive damages. Basically, they won $2.5 million. But what was really interesting, that the judge set aside half of that award, $1.25 million of that award, from what I understand, and said that instead of the state of Maryland paying that out to them for damages, the medical board, individual members of the medical board, based upon their own personal assets, that money had to come out of their personal pockets. And that was such an important thing, because now it finally puts medical boards on notice that, hey, you are not above the law. You can't just go around and make these Gestapo-like decisions, because they're not protected. People aren't protected. Doctors are not protected by the First Amendment. They're not protected by freedom of speech. And this is exactly what happened to the Geyers, because all they did was report an observation. They talked about the science, and they were ostracized. So kudos goes out to them. But it's also set a new precedent, because now people know, medical boards know, that they're not above the law.
Right.
And they could be held accountable.
Well, what I see here, Dr. Bitar, is, again, the human condition. There have been psychological experiments done in the 20th century about this very issue. When you are removed from the consequences of anything that you do, in other words, you perceive artificial, well, however it's induced in you, that you can do anything and there shall be no consequences to those actions, then suddenly, freed from that concern or worry, most humans end up doing horrible things that we would consider even evil. And that accountability changes it. Now, ultimately, I think spirituality has to do with, when no one's looking, doing the right thing. When you're not concerned about that outcome, right? But
we call that integrity, right? When nobody's watching, that's integrity.
Yeah. Yeah. And what we're seeing, though, in the medical profession, they are absolved of liability, particularly with the vaccine issue. And in many cases, that they can continue to visit this on unsuspecting children and families and seemingly without remorse. I think they'll meet the maker in the end. But, you know, right now they're perceiving that there's no consequence.
Well, Robert, I think that what you've just said, and I know that deep down you and I already agree on this, but I think that what you just said, maybe it's because it's the first day on a new venue, but you and I both know that this really isn't about doing the right thing or the wrong thing or whether mm-hmm. they're acting without remorse. I think this is a premeditated, pre-planned, right. You know, 50-100 year manifesto that they put out. And this is very organized and very calculated. And in some cases, it's actually been shown that there is an agenda that is not, it's more than highly suspect.
Sure. Well, so, and the thing is that none of this that we're talking about is unknown, even within the medical field. Of course, they try to shout it down. They try to distract you from it. They utilize the media that they own, big government and the agencies that are owned by big pharma. In fact, interestingly enough, there's an article here. I'll show you now. Everybody can look at this. And it's about FDA, the FDA basically being run by actually, it's a medical advisor to the FDA saying that Congress is owned by pharma. Of course, pharma owns the agency, but why wouldn't the Congress make any changes to this? I mean, do they not want a government that's accountable and responsible to the people? Or are they more interested, as we see, with little to no consequence for the action of taking this money from big pharma, that they line their pockets, or maybe they have a great place to go when they retire from government?
Well, it could be any of those things, right? We just don't know, but I do know that whatever the agenda is, that it is definitely beyond power and money now. It is not as simple as power and money. Why? Because they have all the power, they have all the money. So, you know, at some point, there's got to be something else. And I think that now the way we see things happening, you know, I've heard all these different numbers with the amount of money that's been paid out in the Vaccine Injury Court, but I understand it's over $4 billion,
yeah.
But for something that isn't an issue, right? And something that's
hidden.
Yes,
of course.
Quiet. And this isn't easy for people to go after the injuries that they've sustained. $4 billion in payments for injuries. And these are only the people that were able to find an attorney that was willing to go to bat for them. They could afford the legal process to be able to go there and seek damages. But what about the average person, right, that's being herded, no different than cattle, mm-hmm. down this chute and getting the vaccines. So, and Robert, I'm noticing also what's interesting is how people are getting these internet trolls. They're amazing. I had no idea that this was still going on the way it was going on in 2005, 2006, 2007. But back then, one of my patients, one of the children I was treating, his father worked for Microsoft, mm-hmm. and he was a security analyst. He was basically a person that could, you know, go in and he was a hacker, was what he was, but he actually, I mean, if you want to have a secure system, who do you want to hire? You want to hire somebody who's a safecracker, right?
Right.
They're going to have a security system. And so that's what he did for Microsoft. And he got really upset with all the attacks that I was getting. There were 12 people that were attacking me on the internet. No matter where it was 12 people. I didn't pay attention to it, but a lot of my staff were talking about it, and they really did a number on our clinic. And he found out that all 12 of those individuals ended up being two people. There were multiple aliases of two people, both surgeons, both card-carrying members of an organization called Quackbusters. And they were posing as a grandmother or a single mother, you know, that's under financial duress, who's trying to protect a child and cannot believe that there are these people that are not vaccinating the kids and exposing her child to other children that are unvaccinated. I mean, it was just the most preposterous thing. But that was like over 10 years ago. So I thought, they don't do that stuff anymore. It's amazing. If you start noticing the people that troll, and it doesn't matter whether it's a vaccine issue or it's a religious issue or it's a freedom issue, it's whatever. These trolls, they have 20 or 30 people that are following them. They follow maybe 300 or 400 people, and they make it their business to get on your page and start attacking you. And I've just made it a policy now that if there's no constructive, you know, dialogue after the second time, I just ban them. I don't even care who they are, because if you only got 20 people that are following you, then what type of, I mean, what type of an individual, would that type of individual even come up to you in public and even try to talk to you? They wouldn't. So now the social media platform allows the people that aren't real people, that allow these Autobots and allow these people with a nefarious agenda to hire individuals or program people, program bots to pose as individuals to come up and create an argument. And it's so ludicrous, some of the things that they said. It is blatant lies that they throw out. And it's amazing. So I just, you know, you remember my stupidity formula?
Yeah.
I mean, it's all drawn out. I'm going to release it here very shortly. And we will go through the entire theorem and actually, you know, show what the each variable stands for, and then go through it and dissect it. It's going to be beautiful. If you're not a mathematical type of an individual, if you don't like math, if you don't like physics, if you don't like hard science, you may get lost in it. But for those that love math, or any mathematician out there, or anybody who loves physics, I promise you this will be, in my opinion, my best video ever.
Oh, we're looking forward to that. My gosh, that's going to be great. Listen, I want to take one of the brief breaks we're allowed to take. If anybody needs to run out to take a potty break, I've been at this for an hour and 40 some odd minutes almost now. And, we don't have to take breaks anymore. But the good news is, y'all, even though we're going to play an out, toward the end of the show, we can continue because we're not constrained by syndicated radio. Broadcaster syndicator anymore. So we'll have bonus time today with Dr. Bitar. I feel like he's just getting warmed up. I look at this guy. Look at him. Look at him. All right, here we go. We're back live. Apologize for that. Like I said, this is all new. This is very exciting. The information is just as good as it ever is with Dr. Rasha Bitar here, Advanced Medicine, Mondays on the Robert Scott Bell Show. Again, we are streaming live through Facebook. Well, for Dr. Bitar through Facebook, we'll one day be able to do that as well. But through YouTube, eventually Brighteon Natural News Radio, you'll still be able to catch the MP3 audio streams later on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, and our friends at UK Health Radio still picking up the broadcast, Dr. Bitar. We have a lot of fans in the United Kingdom. Now, you were talking about, let me see here. You were talking about the... Well, actually, you know what? I don't know. Go ahead and talk to your crew and our crew, because they're the same crew now, pretty much.
Yeah, well, yeah, they basically are. But I was just asking whether you had seen the post that I put on Instagram less than 24 hours ago. I think it was probably about 17 hours ago. Did you see that by any chance, about the Egg Boy? Have you heard about Egg Boy?
No, I don't think so.
So basically, the 17-year-old kid in Australia was behind a senator who is known to be a white supremacist, and the senator made the comment that the responsibility of the Christchurch massacre that has resulted in 50 people dead and 50 in the hospital was the fault of Muslim terrorists. Now, he made this statement. It's almost like, wait a second, you realize that this was committed in two different mosques by an Australian. And he makes this comment, and this 17-year-old boy behind him takes an egg and smashes it in the back of his head. And he's gone. Famous people are nominating him for Prime Minister of Australia now. You
know, yeah.
I mean, he's in custody, and they wrestled him down to the ground. I mean, this senator, this adult man, slaps this 17-year-old kid and then goes after him. Now, what's interesting is this. People don't seem to realize what is actually happening. I made this post because my son came up to me. He's 14 years old, right? You think a 14-year-old kid, you know, they're playing their video games, they're doing their own thing. They're not touched by this type of stuff. We as adults have totally forgotten how this impacts that new pop, that new generation. There were rap songs by 15, 16-year-old girls that were out there, you know, 200,000 views, incredible. I mean, I don't necessarily, you know, it may not be my preference, but their words and the music that they put out to send the message to what happened in Christchurch was powerful. This is all over the world now. People are doing this, right? You got Australia. My own son, 14-year-old Robert, he comes up to me and he says, "Dad, I want to fast." I said, "What do you want to fast for?" He said, "To honor those people who died in Christchurch." Now, when a 14-year-old who's detached, who doesn't know anybody that died there, wants to fast in the spirit of Ramzan to honor those that had passed on in an act of violence, you understand now it's affecting them. It's affecting them on a very simple, on a very, very soulful level. And it's a simple thought, but it's a very, very deep thought. So this egg boy, 17-year-old, what takes a 17-year-old who's standing behind a senator to smash an egg in the back of his head? Because he's upset. This right. transcends geographical boundaries. It transcends race and ethnicity and religion. It's showing that the younger population, they get this.
Right.
We adults don't get it. Why don't we get it? Why don't we get it? It's a, I mean, we know that children still have that innate innocence. They're still connected more with the Creator. They're still connected with Spirit. They haven't been detached, or it hasn't been beaten out of them. Or
right. Yes, that's often the case. Yes.
So I just would, you know, I would like to just send a message to the rest of the world saying, wake the hell up.
Yeah.
Because these are our kids. And if the kids get it, then isn't it time that we pulled our heads out of our fourth point of contact, like we used to say in the military?
Yeah.
And for those that don't know what that means, pull our head out of our ass and mm-hmm. start looking at what's happening. I don't know if I can say that. I can say that, right?
I mentioned that earlier in the show before you got here. I was hoping you wouldn't discover that. But yes, we no longer have the FCC limiting our language. But we do have a lot of kids that listen and watch with their parents. So, you know, we just because we can, we're not going to do it on purpose.
That's about the worst that I would say anyway. You know?
Yeah, I know. I wanted to talk to you about that New Zealand mosque shooting. And there are a lot of angles to it. And of course, there have been a lot of shootings over the years since I've been broadcasting for 20 years. We've covered on the air. And I always come back to, you know, the firearms issue. It isn't the gun that did it. Right. And in fact, I would argue that if any of the members of the mosque were armed, they might have stopped this shooter, certainly before all of that rampage had happened. I don't know what the New Zealand gun laws are, but I know that they're the only other country besides the United States that allows for prescription drug advertising. So my question immediately goes to, was this guy on any allopathic pharmaceutical psychiatric meds? What other health conditions did he have? And of course, the advantage that people take on a certain side of the political aisle that say, because this guy, and apparently he got the gun illegally. Okay. Apparently
he had the guns legally,
but I've heard other reports to say illegally, because I first reported legally. Now they're saying that he may have gotten me legally, but the point of this is saying that what about all the other people that get guns legally and never do this, would never consider it? In fact, if they were present, they might have taken this guy out. So the argument then is to make everybody defenseless. I don't want anybody from a mosque, synagogue, church, whatever, to be defenseless.
This is a very good point, Robert. I'm glad you're bringing this up. I don't want to interrupt your thought.
I wanted to hear from you on this.
Well, the first thing is that there were two different mosques. They were about 3 or 4 miles apart, apparently. And in the first mosque, there was a man that attacked the attacker and struggled with him, trying to disarm him, and eventually ended up getting shot at point blank range, and he died. There was a second man at the second, and basically the assailant then left. When he went to the second mosque, there was a, I think the man's name is Abdulaziz. He's an Afghani. Mm-hmm. And when he heard the gunshots, he had his four children with him, apparently. He ran towards the sound, towards the gunfire, and grabbed the first thing he could find, which was a credit card machine, which is about the size of a small rock, and threw it at the assailant. And then the guy was firing at him, and he was hiding behind the cars as he was getting there. The man dropped his shotgun and then ran back to his vehicle to get another weapon. And this Abdulaziz picked up the shotgun, tried to fire it, but it was empty. And then he threw the shotgun at the car that this man was in, shattering the windshield. And that's when the guy got in his car. Apparently he was muttering, because he was irritated at this man unarmed that was rushing
him. Fighting him,
So you're right. If they had a weapon, they could have fired back. And here's the thing, when you have a bully, who is a bully going to pick on? They're going to pick on the most vulnerable. So you're going to pick on most of the people that died were people that couldn't stand up. They were sitting in chairs praying. So these were women and children and, elderly people that had disabilities. A lot of those people were people that were among the dead. But if you're a bully, who are you going to pick on? Are you going to pick on somebody that knows how to fight, that knows how to defend themselves? Or are you going to pick the easiest victim that you can find?
Sure.
During the most susceptible period, which is during Friday prayers for Muslims, that's what they did. So being armed is a way of being strong. And I think that there's nothing wrong with being strong. If you think that guns are the problem, then I think the next thing, in fact, before we pass laws against guns, we need to pass laws to make spoons and forks illegal, because it is the reason that people are obese.
That's right.
Worldwide, the cause of obesity is spoons and forks. So let's make that illegal, then let's make the guns illegal.
And if that doesn't work, Dr. Bitar, we'll go old school on them and remove their hands. And if that doesn't work, we'll sew their mouths shut. Again, where does it end? This is absurd. And so, where do the gunmen typically target, or could be gunwoman, but defenseless populations where they don't expect anybody to fight back. And this is where the deterrent of, as I said many times, it's not my quote, a well-armed society is a polite society, right? You think about that.
Right, because the entire reason for being strong, why is the United States always prided itself on a strong military? Supposedly, is to ensure peace. How many times have we been attacked, right? So the purpose of being strong is to ensure peace, to, as you said, very eloquently, to be polite, to ensure politeness. Mm-hmm. To mandate politeness.
Yeah, and it isn't coming from the government at that point, because it's people going, you know what, if I go across the line here, there could be, again, we talked about this earlier, fascinating, the theme is continuing, consequences to actions. Again, when you live what I would define as a spiritual life, and I know everybody's got their own definitions, but it'd be one, like we said, you live your life in a pious way, but a kind way, a loving way, when no one's looking. You're not expecting a reward, and you're going to do what we might consider the right thing, despite the fact that, well, you might get away with it, or you might have the perception of getting away with it. There are those that are running around thinking that they can get away with things. Now, there's also the aberrant alteration of brain and neurological health through gut damage. We talk about iatrogenic causes of disease, damaging the gut even with an antibiotic, however needed, if you don't know how to repair it, that could result in psychological, emotional problems because of the gut-brain connection. So we come back to modern medicine saying, yeah, they're good at some stuff, but they're really good at screwing us up.
Well, and that's a very true statement, because a lot of these people, we've talked about this, gun violence, those people have been shown to have been on antidepressants and anti-anxiolytics. But Robert, you know, what's interesting is that, again, I think that I understand the angle you're taking with this, with the health aspect, and it's a good angle to take. But I think this is fundamentally a bigger problem than just health. I think it comes down to autonomy. It comes down to what you were talking about, you know, with the vulnerability. They attack people, you know, when they're in a mosque. But before somebody starts thinking this is about religion, it's not. It's about humanity. Because the synagogue, there was a synagogue that was attacked in 2017.
Yes.
We had the person in South Carolina that, you know,
attacked a church, a black church.
So it has nothing to do with Islam or Christianity or Judaism, because all three faiths have been attacked in the most vulnerable places, in the houses of their worship. Mm-hmm. So this has to do with, you know, you brought this up earlier. You talked about integrity. It's doing the right thing when nobody's watching.
Yeah.
We're talking about where we as a world, a nation, as a global society, need to recognize that an attack on one of us is an attack on all of us. It does not discriminate between gender or sexual preference or ethnicity or skin color or belief system. They're attacking all of us. And I have, you know, I made this statement. One person actually made a very interesting comment, because I said that when somebody crosses that line and attacks one of us, then I think we need to, as you said, and Robert, you and I are exactly on the same sheet of music here.
Right.
We need to show them that there's some kind of consequence for that action. I personally think they should be drawn and quartered in public, so that anybody else that's going to follow that same line of thought is going to think secondly. And this person posted on Instagram, and it was really interesting. He said that what you don't understand is that the God's love for us, and by you making the statement, you are showing your ignorance by coming down to the same level of these people that are perpetuating this violence. And I will pray for you that you understand and become aware of God's love. And then he had the prayer for hands. Mm-hmm. And my response was, you know, first of all, I appreciate what you said. And you're, of course, right, because God's love is infinitely greater than my capacity to understand it. And I appreciate that somebody with the wise words as you, you must be a better person, certainly a more evolved person, if you can still love your oppressor, because that is actually one of the teachings, right? And all the different religions, monotheistic things, to actually love your oppressor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And not allow them to oppress, but to forgive them, to forgive your oppressor. And I said, listen, I would rather be human. And he made the comment. He said, the reason you hate is because, you know, he said that I was hating too. And the reason is because I'm human. I said, well, I would rather be human and protect those that are better than me, like yourself, and maybe not be in that same capacity of being able to forgive my oppressor, But he said he was going to pray for me. And I said, I thank you for praying for me, because to me, that's the greatest gift anybody can do, to pray for me.
Right.
But I choose to stand up for, even though it's not the same evolutionary scale as he is. And I understand that. I don't even want to be in that evolutionary scale. I don't want to love my oppressor. I want to defend my children. I want to defend my family. I want to defend my friends. I want to defend those that have put their lives and their trust in me to defend them, and live that the best way I can. It's my time. It's my time. But to love your oppressor is a really evolved thought process. And I think, you know, it's beyond me.
I get it. And I listen, I'm glad we get to talk about these things on Advanced Medicine. It's not just about medicine, right? Although, you know, in the Native American tradition, they talk about good medicine. I think what we're doing is good medicine. And, I want to transition. We got a few more minutes before we're going to, cut off for our, you know, 2 hour broadcast show, and we're going to continue. We're going to do extra beyond that. So don't worry about it. But there's researchers claiming that they're about to come out with, get this, Dr. Bitar, a vaccine for arthritis. No, I kid you not. A vaccine for arthritis. And you can see this article. We have it linked up in the show notes at robertscottbell.com. And they're talking about this, this vaccine basically reducing pain. But how is it doing that? Apparently, it's saying it blocks nerve growth factor. Here, let me just highlight this thing. Blocks nerve growth factor, which then they say, it gets better, Dr. Bitar, this is the cause of arthritic pain. Nerve growth factor, the cause of arthritic pain? Then everybody should have arthritis. Everybody has nerve growth factor. What is that?
You know what's amazing is that you start to see, let's pretend like you and I have no medical scientific knowledge. We don't even know what biology is. We don't even know how people reproduce. We don't know anything, okay? This is for that. So you have a nerve growth factor. What does that sound like? It's a factor that allows for nerves to grow, okay? Mm-hmm. And now we're going to block it. So as if our population on this planet is, they're thinking too much. Let's dumb them down. Well, no, wait a second. They're not thinking.
Oh, no. We had a perfect timing, and I got a frozen. He kind of froze up. Oh, this is not good. This is not good. All right. But this is what happens on a live broadcast. I'm going to disconnect, and we're going to reconnect to him momentarily as we're going to wrap up the finale of Advanced Medicine. I hope he remembers. We warmed up on this and said, hey, it could happen where a frozenness could occur, and that just reconnect and I can reactivate the links and we can finish up the show. Well, I might have to do it myself at this point. This is but that's all right. I'm up for it. And we're going to do more with Dr. Bitar regardless. But think about this idea that they've come up with a vaccine that will block nerve growth factor, and they say it's the cause of arthritic pain. First of all, it's not the cause of arthritic pain. It may be a pathway or a complementary element that allows pain to exist, but there's a reason for pain itself. And that is often that the nerves are being inflamed by metabolic wastes like, well, uric acid. If you eat too much excess animal protein and your liver can't handle it, can't alter it to be excreted appropriately, can accumulate and impact on the nerves and inflame them, or heavy metals or other substances that are known to be neurotoxic. And that is the cause of this pain. Liver congestion is the cause of this pain. Dehydration is the cause of arthritic pain. You follow me? There's so many things that relate to the metabolic dysfunctions that occur that manifest as pain of the skeletal system, that to block nerve growth factor via vaccination, this is mad science, I tell you. It's mad science. So with that, I'm going to sign off here on the Robert Scott Bell Show. We're going to continue, those of you watching on YouTube live, but we're going to sign off temporarily, and I want you to remember this. Remember, it's the God's honest truth. The power to heal is yours.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.